your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day as the United States of America careens toward the end of May. And what a May it's been of pandemic and riots and political disagreements of every kind. Invasions by cicadas and murder hornets and more. Gigantic hail the size of grapefruits in Texas. What is going on in our country? And what does the future bring? And is there a power of prayer during a time of pandemic? We'll also be speaking later with the producer, writer, director of that spectacularly wonderful documentary about Clarence Thomas, Justice Thomas talking in his own words. Michael Pack has also been appointed to a major position by President Trump, which, of course, is controversial among Democrats. But right now, we have the chance to speak to Stephen Moore. And Stephen Moore, of course, is a longtime member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board. He is the author of Trumponomics and other bestsellers. He is a financial advisor to President Trump and really to the nation at large. And Stephen, how are you surviving the first stages of opening up from the lockdowns?
Hi, Michael. Great to be with you. I hope you have a great weekend. Look, we talked a couple weeks ago. I was kind of in a bad mood because I just felt like things were not progressing very well and we were just all stuck in our homes. But I have to say, I'm feeling a lot better about things today than I was 2 or 3 weeks ago. I think things are definitely headed in the right direction, both from a health standpoint and the standpoint of economies opening up around the country. So I know you're there on the West Coast, but I got to tell you, you know, in Florida and in Georgia and Tennessee and Texas, South Carolina, Iowa, Nebraska, these states are opening up for business, and they've been open up for business actually for the last few weeks. And not only is that bringing more commerce and more jobs, but it's also bringing, here's the real kicker on this one, Michael, those states that have opened up their economies, they actually are seeing lower death rates and lower amounts of hospitalization than the states that are still locked down. So there's a real evidence here that you can open up your economy safely and securely. I hope the governor of Washington State and Oregon and Governor Newsom in California are listening, because you can do this in a way that gets people back to work and businesses back and up and running without endangering the health of your citizens.
Well, it does appear to be suggesting that that's the case. And it's one of those things that I think everybody's trying to come to terms with, is if you look at the states that have the lowest death rate, they include states that have had the most aggressive lockdowns, like California. California has a very low death rate. It's unbelievable. Texas has even lower. And in Texas, Governor Greg Abbott basically ended his stay-at-home order at the end of April, a month ago. So, and it seems not to have hurt the public health situation in Texas at all. With all of this going go ahead.
Let me just give you another example. I mean, you mentioned California and Texas, but I think even a better example, Michael, might be the case of Florida versus New York. And there's a good piece in the Wall Street Journal about this week that showed that basically Florida and New York almost exactly have the same population. New York, Florida is a little bit bigger now in population than New York. But here's the amazing thing. Even though they have roughly the same population, and even though Florida has a much older population than New York because, you know, retirees go to live in Florida, New York has had five times the death rate that Florida has had, and yet Florida has opened up their economy. Ron DeSantis is becoming one of the heroes around the country. He's the governor of Florida. And so Cuomo, by the way, Andrew Cuomo the other day said, we don't know what we're doing. He said all of the, quote, science and experts have been wrong. We don't know when we can open up our state because we don't know who to believe. A lot of the experts and a lot of the science on coronavirus that we thought was true 2 months ago, now we're discovering it's not. And for parents out there, if you've got young kids under the age of, 15, the best thing you can do is get them outside, get them active. Don't keep them locked into the house. Children are not vulnerable to this disease, with a few rare exceptions. But keeping children locked up, Michael, is a really bad idea.
Okay, without question, and which is why some of the walking that people are doing for exercises is a great thing. But the whole country was transfixed over Memorial Day weekend, last weekend, with that photograph from Lake of the Ozarks, Missouri, that showed a lot of people. Your colleague at the Wall Street Journal, Daniel Henger, wrote about a lot of people who seem to have been drinking too much beer during the pandemic. They were splashing around in a pool where there wasn't a, it wasn't a pool, it may have been a lake somewhere at Lake of the Ozarks. But there are folks splashing around and very close to one another. Don't you think there is some risk that we all of a sudden get some kind of alarming second wave? And then how are people supposed to respond?
Yeah, it's a good question. Look, I'm not a health expert. I don't even want to pretend to be one. So that would be probably a better question to ask to, someone who is a public health official. But I believe that this shutdown of the American economy has been one of the greatest mistakes in the history of this country. I think the costs of this, both in terms of the economic costs, but also just the cost in human health, have been substantially larger than any benefit from the shutdown. Now, that being said, I do believe you got to be smart about this. If you're going to open up your economy and businesses, if you want to stay safe, be smart. I do. If I go into a public place, I wear a mask. I don't wear a mask outside. I don't think there's any reason ever to wear a mask outside. But when I go in, to any kind of crowded place or a store, or I wear a mask, I think it does make sense to social distance, for a while, just as a matter of good prudence. I don't have a problem with people wearing gloves and things of that nature. And, going to a swimming pool, I don't know if I would do that yet, I'm not so sure it's maybe the healthiest thing to do. But I also think that at some point, people have to be able to make up their own decisions. You know me a long time, Michael. I'm pretty libertarian. I want to allow people to make their own decisions rather than having these dictatorial politicians and governors and mayors make that decision for them.
Okay, so right now, the Congressional Budget Office, which is officially nonpartisan, and I know you're paying close attention to this, says that the third quarter, which is coming up, that's June, July, and August, that those months are supposed to see an annualized growth for the economy of 12%. That would break all records, right?
Well, look, I think that that we're going to have a really bad second quarter, right? I mean, the second quarter is going to be a disaster. We're going to see about a 30 to 35% decline in our GDP. That's a disaster. I don't think that's probably ever happened in the history of our nation. So the third quarter is going to be better just because we've hit a real new low point in our country. And so we will have some momentum going into the fall. It's a question of whether we're going to have enough momentum to get, the unemployment rate down. And we're going to see 20% unemployment in this country, Michael, something we've never seen before. And it's going to be hard. I think this is going to be a hard road ahead. I do think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. But when you shut down your businesses and you have so many hundreds of thousands of businesses in bankruptcy now, it's just going to take some time. And I do worry mostly about our great cities. New York, Manhattan is a ghost town right now. Chicago is a ghost town. That's a big problem.
That is where the devastation has... That is where the devastation has been concentrated. Stephen Moore, you can read his latest. It's posted at michaelmedved.com. We will be right back. We are joined by Dr. Robert Epstein, who has contributed greatly to all of the conversation about the whole need to get the economy back, to end the lockdowns, and his emphasis, like so many others, is on testing. He recently, Dr. Epstein has a PhD in psychology from Harvard. He was editor-in-chief of Psychology Today. And it's a pleasure speaking to you again, Dr. Epstein.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back.
Right now, you're talking about something called National Testing Day, and I love this. It's part of the Test Everyone plan. And the subheading for National Testing Day is the day we kill the virus and reopen the economy. And maybe you can explain that very briefly before I try to pester you to answer a bunch of questions that are puzzling me and I think puzzling America. First of all, what's National Testing Day?
Sure. Can you hear me okay, by the way? I just want to make sure.
Hear you just fine. Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, yes, the first thing to recognize is that what we're doing now is a little bit risky and is going to prolong the problem that we're having for potentially a very long time, a year or two. Those are the best estimates right now. And so I proposed an alternative, which is perfect for President Trump, in my opinion. I've not been able to get this idea in front of him, unfortunately, and I don't think his advisors have ever mentioned this possibility. But there is a simple way, common sense, simple way, to stop the transmission of the virus completely, kill the virus completely within a few weeks, that is eradicated from the population, and reopen our entire economy and all the schools without fear, without the need for social distancing. So how can that be? What is that method? You know, when I was on Tucker Carlson's show, he was stunned when I actually described the method, and he said, well, that's such a great idea. Why has no one thought of it before? So here it is. It's very simple. We manufacture, mass produce, actually, a simple testing device. And yes, these devices exist, or at least nearly so. They certainly will exist within the next 2 weeks. A simple device that one of those electronic thermometers. You stick it in your mouth, so it's just measuring properties of your saliva. You take it out of your mouth, and either a few seconds or a few minutes later, like with the home pregnancy test, something changes on a little screen. If it changes to one color, that means you're good, no virus. Changes to another color, maybe red, that means you're carrying the virus. So in the morning of National Testing Day, and we all would have been informed about this day for probably a month or so by the president, by all the governors, all the mayors, and lots of celebrity influencers, everyone from James Woods to Kanye West to Kim Kardashian, et cetera, et cetera. We all will have learned about this day for weeks leading up to National Testing Day. And the U.S. Post Office, which reaches 99.83% of the population, and that is almost everyone, will have mailed
these little testing
devices. Assuming
we still have a post office, right?
Yes, we do. We do.
Yes, I mean, President Trump kind of wants to get rid of it, but that's all right. Okay, so just to cut to the chase, if I can, Dr. Epstein, what
sure.
we're talking about here is on National Testing Day, everybody either gets a green check or a red X over their heads, as the little
right.
graphic shows. We'll post the graphic
sure.
at our website at michaelmedved.com. And if you get a red X over your head and you are test positive for the virus, you self-isolate for 2 to 3 weeks, not the end of the world. But then if you're a non-carrier, you don't have the virus, you go back to work. You go back to school. And then you're saying that go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, yes, you go back to work and school, and there's no need for social distancing. And there's no need for the fear that we all have now, because the carriers are they're self-isolated
and receiving medical care.
Testing.
The carriers, presumably, do we know this now that after you have recovered, you have antibodies, but you can't be a carrier? In other words, after this 2 to 3 weeks of self-isolation, what happens to the carriers?
Well, as soon as they test negative, which should take 2 to 3 weeks, and possibly medical care, of course, they cannot, after they test negative, they cannot infect anyone. This whole process, once these little devices have been mass produced and distributed, the day, in the morning, we all test. In the afternoon, we reopen the economy and the schools. By that evening, we're also doing a lot of secondary testing, meaning we've also mailed millions of these devices to businesses, schools, churches, stadiums. You want to get in to a theater or a restaurant, you got to take the little test at the door. If you're negative, you go in. If you're positive, you go home. That's the safety net.
Would the government underwrite the cost of all these millions and millions of tests?
Yes, and the cost, it turns out, is under $7 billion, and that includes the shipping, because the test, the best candidate for this type of test is now it's being evaluated by a team at MIT. And they estimate that in small quantities, it would cost $6 to produce.
The president is saying fairly regularly that we're doing more testing than any country in the world. That, in fact, at one point he said we're doing more than all the other countries in the world combined. Are we leading the world in testing right now?
Well, in terms of number of tests, yes. But all that matters is the per capita. How many people, per million are you testing? And there, again, we fall short, quite short. There are a lot of countries that are ahead of us on a per capita basis. Again, we're kind of failing. We haven't tested very many people. There's another problem, by the way, is that we're spreading out our testing over time. That doesn't work because someone who might have tested negative 2 weeks ago, suddenly they contract the disease and now they start spreading it and we're not paying attention to them anymore. In other words, if you really want to stop the virus, stop the transmission, you do what was done in that building in South Korea. You do what was done in a town called Vo in Italy and a couple other places. You test everyone on the same day. You separate the carriers from the non-carriers that day and we're all free to go out there and reopen society without fear and without masks.
And but with testing and with contact tracing. Dr. Robert Epstein, we will post material, including a very handy-dandy graphic about National Testing Day. And let's hope we come to something like this.
You're listening to The Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, it is a pleasure to welcome back to this program Ian Bremmer, who has been, I think, one of the most influential commentators about the worldwide nature of this pandemic and America's role in the world during the COVID-19 coronavirus situation. Ian Bremmer is the founder and principal of the Eurasia Group, which is the world's leading political risk research and consulting firm. He is the author of regular reports. You can read some of them at our website at michaelmedved.com. Ian, right before you came on, I was reading a statement by a fairly outspoken member of the state legislature here in Washington, a Republican from Ferndale named Doug Erickson. And he wrote, "Now the deep state is proposing communist Chinese-style freedom-destroying, liberty-crushing techniques to fight the communist China virus." I think you could count him probably in that group of people who think we should be emphasizing China's role in this more regularly and in more negatively. What do you say about the necessity, if any, for the U.S. and China to actually work together in dealing with a pandemic?
Well, that's a fairly nutty statement by that guy. But, you know, when you start talking about state legislatures, that can happen. Hey, we even get some of them at the national level. look, it's obviously it's a global crisis. So you'd like there to be a global response. I mean, most of our critical supply chain for medical goods and equipment happens to come from, or at least in part, from China. So you don't want to fight with those guys right now. If you did this, you know, you might have thought about that before the crisis, not now. But there are, Michael, as you know, we've got some real issues with the way the Chinese did and didn't handle this in the early days. And they are, in my view, responsible for the original sin of the pandemic, the original cover-up that while 5 million Chinese were leaving Wuhan business as usual, 500,000 leaving the China's a country from Wuhan, that's what got you the original Iran and European outbreaks, which then became outbreaks in the United States too. Final point I would say is that you can blame the Chinese all you want and should, but that doesn't mean that the United States hasn't also made some very serious missteps in the way we've responded to this crisis.
Okay, in terms of the serious missteps that the United States is making, right now there are lots of voices. They were demonstrating at state capitals around the country against both Republican and Democratic governors.
Yep.
And the demonstrators are saying that right now the cure is worse than the disease, that the time has come to end the economic shutdown. Do you think we've reached that point?
Well, I think that smart people can come to different conclusions on exactly what that point is. I can tell you, Michael, that I would have strongly opposed opening the economies 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, because I was worried that our healthcare systems were going to get overwhelmed, like in northern Italy, that you were going to have people, the healthcare workers get sick and die, that you were going to have to triage people that needed critical care. And we're no longer in that situation. We've now surged healthcare adequately, both personnel and PPE, that we're not going to need to send people home that need critical care because they're too old or they've got, you know, pre-existing conditions and the rest. So then we should look at whether or not, state by state, very clearly, what kind of damage is caused by keeping the economy closed, human damage that will include deaths, and what kind of damage is caused by opening it. And I think it's reasonable to understand that as a trade-off. I do know that the last time we decided to go to war against something, the war against terror after 9/11, I think we went way too far in we've got to lock down national security and our borders and our airports and spend trillions of dollars in Afghanistan war, no matter what, forever. And I think we overspent. And I think at the expense of liberty in the United States. And I think there is certainly a danger that could happen in the United States. I don't personally think we're there yet, but it could happen.
Wouldn't someone say that, frankly, those precautions, that tightening of security after September 11th, prevented the follow-up major terrorist attack that a lot of people were fearing, that it actually worked?
Yes. But I'm also saying that if you look at how many trillions of dollars were spent and ask if you had spent some of that money instead of all of the TSA and all of the checks and all of the implications of the Patriot Act on, say, improved health care, you would have saved a lot more people. And I think that the unwillingness, it's exactly the same point. It was very clear after 9/11, we can never allow another attack like that again in the United States, no matter what the cost. Well, that's kind of the same argument as saying we cannot allow anyone else to die of coronavirus. Well, I mean, you know, if you say that, the cost is going to be extraordinary. It is a trade-off. And it's important for people with in an unemotional, a clear-headed, and it's not a political issue. it's an issue of what the costs are, what the trade-offs are. It's, you know, whether you open the economy now in, let's say, Ohio or Florida, or you open it in 4 weeks, there are costs to either of those decisions. They're trade-offs, and they need to be discussed as such. It's not just because you're on the side of fighting the war that you necessarily get to win all of the arguments. That's a big mistake.
Do you fear, as I do, that this thing becomes a political football? That,
of course.
That basically you have conservatives saying, let's open up now, regardless, and people on the left saying, no, we can basically never open up. How do you break that political logjam?
Well, I don't believe that even the hardest core anti-Trump folks are going to say you can never open up, because the cost of keeping it locked down are going to get prohibitive really fast. And we've already done $2 trillion. We're going to do another $2 trillion. Maybe that lasts us until the beginning of summer. And then what? Right. I mean, at some point, you know, even if you don't have this crisis under, you know, sort of control, and you still don't have contact tracing, and you still don't have enough tests, and we don't really now compared to other countries in the world like South Korea or Germany. And I wish Trump would talk. I mean, he doesn't do numbers really, but I wish he'd talk about per capita tests as opposed to absolute numbers of tests, because that's relevant. But no, of course, in this is an election season. It's a completely divided media. It's a completely divisive presidency. This is going to be politicized both inside the country and globally. And that means, of course, that the response that we deserve for this crisis is going to be deeply inadequate, because we don't what we
okay,
want.
Okay, very quickly.
And the corporates. Yeah, guys.
Very quickly, in the time left to us, do you agree that some of the best handling of this crisis so far has been in South Korea and perhaps in Germany?
Yeah, of the bigger countries. I mean, New Zealand and Taiwan and Singapore have been really great, too. But those are tiny places. Of the countries with population, South Korea and Germany. And the reason it's important is because, you know what, the Chinese lied to them, too. The Chinese obscured to the WHO. That affected South Korea and Germany at the same time as the United States. So if you're an American citizen, you have to ask yourself, yeah, you can be mad at China, but how come the world's best superpower wasn't able to respond as effectively as South Korea and Germany? That should be unacceptable to American citizens.
Amen to that. Ian Bremmer, his latest commentaries are posted on our website at michaelmedved.com. Okay, it's great. I'm doing the show from home, as I have been for more than 2 months. It's called Lockdown Time. Jeremy Steiner, Pride of Hillsdale College, is running the boards all alone at the office, but he's also taking your calls, 1-800-955-1776. But what it means is during commercial breaks, which are very necessary for allowing us to do the show, sometimes we're talking back and forth, and Jeremy made a great point about the famous biblical verse, V'ahavta v'reacha kamocha, in Hebrew, that you should love your neighbor like you love yourself, that his understanding of the reason it adds as yourself is to emphasize the importance of loving yourself. If you hate yourself, if you despise yourself, if you think you are a low, miserable human being, you will have no impulse to do right. And you have to, in order to actually love your neighbor. And by the way, that's also a very old, valid, I think, profound interpretation. But particularly regarding the sin of causeless hatred, which is so destructive to every aspect of our lives. I do think that the only way is to have precisely the kind of causeless love that I think God wants us to have. Not because your neighbor is nice. Some neighbors are easy to love, really. Some people are just easy to love. Most of us, it's more of a challenge. to do our best in that regard, I think, is something that Americans have traditionally been pretty good at. And maybe we can recapture in the year 2020. Let's go to your calls to Gary in Seattle. Gary, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hi, Michael. Hey, in response to your initial topic that you brought out on this, people saying that God's doing this to get us to live differently. He's been saying that for thousands of years through the history of man, live differently. So to me, the coronavirus, it's not that God has done this, but it's a man-made event. God is with us through it, and he'll bring us through it. But what I'm struck by most of all is what is said in three of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And Jesus is talking about his coming. He says there's going to be an increase of pestilences in the last days. That's the warning signs that we should be paying attention to know that Jesus is coming soon. And that's what I see in the coronavirus and the other viruses and epidemics we've had that have happened in recent years. There's an increase to this. It's getting more and more impactful. And it's supposed to wake us up to remind us Jesus is coming. Be ready.
Yeah. Now, again, when you look at this pandemic compared to other pandemics in human history, I'm sure there are some people who could have taken that approach in the 1300s. In the middle 1300s, one-third of the population of Europe was killed, the equivalent of 100 million people dying here in the United States. So I'm careful about that. And again, I think that part of what people understand about something like this is that certainly God allows this to happen. God controls the universe, but it is not a supernatural form of action, as Jim Dennison said. It is not a supernatural kind of curse or punishment. And but you're right, and I think people are right generally, is that the Judeo-Christian tradition sees punishment as not revenge as much as sending a message. And the message here can again be as direct for all of us, if we choose to make it, to get a better perspective on what's really important, which is why there's a story today that one business is booming in the state of Washington, the lottery. The state lottery is just skyrocketing with people shut in because I guess they can't go to the tribal casinos or any casinos. Let's go to Sid in Atlanta, Georgia. Sid, you're on the Medved Show.
Thanks, Michael. One love to your whole crew. I want to say that I agree with you when you talk about the going vegetarian aspect of this pandemic. But I also want to add that I think that when it comes to the biblical aspect, God wanting to dim the light a little bit when it comes to pollution. You know, one thing I've been doing during this pandemic was watching Nova, PBS a lot, learning a lot of things, and I've seen how this, you know, this planet just needs a break when it comes to pollution. And I think that's taken, the planet now has a chance, a chance to breathe a little. And we need a president in office who could respect that when it comes to the Paris Accord aspect of this as well.
Well, again, I look, what you're saying is based on the idea that apparently this is the clearest skies they've measured in Los Angeles in more than 50 years. The air quality, by the way, in Los Angeles has been getting better generally over the last 50 years. But now, because the freeways are not crowded, because people are not driving anywhere, because the economy is largely shut down all across the country. And I imagine that's true, too. Do you notice more sunshine, less smog, less pollution in Atlanta, Sid?
Yeah, no question. It's like everywhere in Paris. And I think this is a chance for the rich ones to take a break. Also, all the oil dealers, you know, the economy slowed down and the money also slowed down for the rich folks. So
things have slowed down for everybody. But of course, it's poor people who are always most vulnerable and who are hardest hit. And I appreciate your call. The idea that in a period of time, and I know Americans don't believe this, just like most Americans don't believe that we've actually been lowering the crime rate in the country, we have. The crime rate has gone down quite steadily since the mid-80s. It's really dramatically lower. And that's, I think, something important to recognize, that we've also improved our environmental quality, not degraded it in recent years. More people are fed, less people are choking to death on greenhouse gases. Except for the climate change alarmists, there are reasons to be grateful for environmental improvements. Let's go. Last call to Brett in Lacey, Washington. You're on the Medved Show.
Yes,
hello,
Michael
Brett.
Medved?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Medved. Hello.
Yes. Yes, you're on.
Yes, Michael. I'm from Lacey, Washington. I talked to you a few years ago. I'm a longtime listener. I wanted to ask you your perspective on abortion in regard to God's judgment on America, when you consider the Old Testament with Moloch.
Yes, I understand that. I understand that argument. But, you know, abortion is one of those other things where things are much better today. Now, even though Democrats take a more extreme position, and a position that I soundly condemn, the truth is the rate of abortion has gone down dramatically. It used to be in the 1980s, early 1980s, that one out of three pregnancies ended in abortion. And today it's down to below one out of five. Now, that means a lot of babies who are in this world who wouldn't have been. So the idea that if God was going to send a message particularly about that, first of all, it wouldn't go around the whole world, because I don't know that there has been any dramatic increase worldwide in abortion. And there certainly has been the opposite of that in the United States. And Brett, I appreciate your call, and I appreciate the perspectives, all of the perspectives that have been offered here. There's no definitive answer, but I think the one definitive answer is something as painful as this, something as sweeping as this, something as life-changing as this should be a message for each of us to try to be better individuals, to do the things that are most important, that count the most. And yes, it should be an impulse for us to be a better country. And I hope, even when it comes to our politics and our debate and our conversation, to be a little more respectful of people with whom you disagree. President Lincoln said this in his first inaugural address, is we are not enemies, we must be friends. Now, unfortunately, there are folks on the other side who didn't listen. And listening to the need to come together and respond effectively as a united nation, that's important. We'll be talking to Alan Dershowitz about the Constitution and violations and threats to that constitutional order for this greatest nation on God's green earth.